Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood, episode 96. My guest today is singer and songwriter Lisa Loeb. She's going to talk to us about how she manages motherhood in the music business.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood. If you are listening for the first time, welcome. So glad you're here. And if you are a regular, hi, I've missed you. I'm feeling a little sassy and strange. I'm actually not even in Hollywood this week doing the show. I'm actually in Oklahoma. This has been a really tough week for my family. We had a family member pass away, so I had to suddenly leave town and come and be with my family. So you know what? The beauty of podcasting is that I can do it from all over. That's why you have like wildly successful podcasters who are like in the middle of Ohio or Indiana or something like that. So it's good to know that I could keep, of course, I don't know if I could keep the name Motherhood in Hollywood if I was actually in Oklahoma. Do you think people would listen to a podcast called Motherhood in Oklahoma? I don't think so. Sounds really judgy, and I mean it too. I mean it that way. Anyway, so that's what's happening with me. Before I came to Oklahoma this week, though, so awesome. I got to go and interview Blake Shelton on The Voice. I'm doing a special piece for him, a featured piece for him for the local TV station. I don't know if I've mentioned before, but I am the entertainment reporter for KJRH Channel 2 here in Tulsa. And I do entertainment reports for them from time to time. It's not every week because, Lord, I do not have that kind of time. But whenever big stories come up or, you know, things like that happen And whenever big stories or feature story opportunities come up, I get to go and cover that from my station, which is so much fun because it's where I got my start in TV. I was an intern at Channel 2, and it's where I learned how to do a stand-up in front of the camera and, like, how to write, you know, stories and keep them short, as short as I could. So yeah, it's just really cool to kind of be working for them again. So anyway, I interviewed Blake Shelton and The Voice, and we talked about Oklahoma, and we talked about his his sense of humor on the show. And that's going to be airing in a very special piece for the finale of The Voice. And I will make sure that I share that on Motherhood in Hollywood and also my YouTube channel as well. If you guys have not subscribed to my YouTube channel, do that. Why not? I don't post a ton of videos. Maybe I should post more. But more importantly, make sure you subscribe to my podcast, Motherhood in Hollywood. And follow me on Twitter at Motherhood in Hollywood and on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood and Facebook as well. I like to have a lot of fun. I have a, some might say, quirky sense of humor. I like to think of it more as just honest. Maybe I'm blunt is one word. My mom says mean, but, you know, whatever. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Okay, so I want to get to the interview with my guest today. It's Lisa Loeb. She's a singer and songwriter. You guys will remember she wrote this song called Stay from the Reality Bites soundtrack. And believe me, you'd be so proud of me. I resisted every urge not to sing it to her during this interview. Which I'm sure she appreciated my my resistance. But she wrote the song Stay from the Reality Bites soundtrack. She's also an author. She has an entire eyewear line. And I just a really lovely and inspiring mom in the music business. So I cannot wait to share this interview with you guys. Here's my interview with Lisa Loeb. So this is such a treat for me to get to talk with you and interview you because I've been listening to your music for so long. And of course, my husband, when I told him that I was interviewing Lisa Loeb, hi, welcome, by the way.
Thank you very much.
When I told him I was interviewing you, he was very jealous. My husband was a radio DJ in a college station in the 90s, late 90s. And so as you can imagine, he is very familiar with music. Reality Bites was one of his favorite movies. So this is quite a treat. I'm excited. So thank you for making the time to talk with me.
Oh, sure. Thank you. This is so cool. So is your husband, where did he go to college, or where was he at DJ?
We met at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater. So there is like a little college town radio station there called The Spy. And okay. He was the music director. I think he was all of like 19, 20 years old.
That's
awesome. Yeah, and he loved it. So he got to meet all of these great like indie bands that would come through, college bands that would come through, because they were the only, you know, alternative station in town, really the only radio station in town. And he got to interview a lot of great people. But I want to talk to you about, well, let's start first of all with, you have quite a repertoire of music, and it's not just the music that we're talking about, like, you know, from the 90s and things like that. I want to talk about your kids' music and when you decided to start making more family oriented types of songs and albums.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. I started making kids' music a long time ago before I had kids. Mm-hmm. I guess it makes sense because I wasn't really in the kids' music world per se. I had a friend who had a band called Gustavir Yellow Gold, which is awesome, that I would listen to before I even had kids. It was like kind of like Bread meets the Beatles and kind of just very dark and beautiful. And animated, he did his own animation. And then also my friend from college, my freshman roommate, who I also had a band with for like 4 years. I mean, 6 years. My friend Elizabeth Mitchell had done really well in the kids' music world. So I knew it existed. I just wasn't really in it. And I got an opportunity through Barnes & Noble to do a record. They wanted me – it was sort of the beginnings of people trying things that were different from trying to put their music out in different ways, you know, not just typical large major labels, because I think things were starting to change, and major labels are really great when you're, you know, at the top of your game. They're not great.
40 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many of us who aren't in that world. And a lot of people who are in that world aren't always in that world. So it's not like a consistent thing. So anyway, when Barnes & Noble offered to do something, that sounded really cool because their distribution, you know, especially back then, about 15 years ago, you know, you still went into a bookstore and bought books and even music. So they asked me to do something different. They suggested a kids record, which was actually something I had wanted to do, but it wasn't because I liked kids that much. And it wasn't because I liked kids music that much. It was more of my nostalgia. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And when I was very young, there was just a whole entertainment was really for everyone. Even, you know, you'd stay up late and watch All in the Family with your parents or The Tonight Show and you had no idea what was happening. I would watch Fernwood Tonight, which was it's a variety show. It was like a talk show, but it was actually a joke. It was a parody of a talk show.
Oh, a parody of a talk show. Okay.
Yeah, it was really funny with Martin Mull and so I'd watch that, the Sonny and Cher show, the Carol Burnett. There were all these variety shows that were on at the time. And then the kids' music I listened to was more just sort of what was on the radio in the 1970s. A lot of soft pop, a lot of disco, a lot of melodic singer-songwriter songs like Brand New Key by Melody. Mm-hmm. Melanie. And I don't know, it was sort of more focused on the grown-up. Even things like Sesame Street, which had just started, it had a very grown-up, funny, smart sensibility. And I always wanted to do something like that. I just, like, I love silliness, like The Muppet Show, but cleverness and storytelling. And so that's sort of what I wanted to capture. And that's how I got into kids' music. But I did make my first record with my friend Elizabeth Mitchell, which was more of a kids' record. It has songs like Big Rock Candy Mountain and our version of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
But as I've moved along, that's Catch the Moon, right?
Yeah, exactly. Catch the Moon. And I love it. It's really beautiful and it's real instruments and real musicians and real singing. And I learned a lot from working with Liz about how to make kids records. She always said, sing like there's a baby sleeping in the next room. So that's why I offered her records which tend to be a little more folky. They're very hushed, and even when there's a band present, it's a real band, but it's not like a hit you over the head, wacky,
like rock,
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Teletubby, or no, not Teletubby. What is the
Wiggles and stuff?
Yeah,
like
the
that.
Wiggles and stuff like that. Yeah,
okay. I will say, funny, since I started making kids music, people give me a lot of kids music, and there's even music that I don't necessarily connect to that sometimes my kids, especially when they were younger, especially my son, really does connect to. So,
isn't that interesting? What they hear is totally. I mean, I think it's true that your music taste can develop and grow, because what my daughter listens to over and over and over again isn't necessarily what I like. Right now, though, thankfully, she's into the Trolls soundtrack, which is really a fun soundtrack.
Oh, SU, we love that one.
Do you listen to it? Do you guys listen to it a lot and watch the movie?
I've only seen the movie once, but they've seen it a couple times. But we listen to the soundtrack all the time, Trolls, and we also listen to the soundtrack from Sing. They've seen the movie a bunch of times. But Trolls is really, really cute and funny. I love the song Hair Up. It's so, hard, you know?
It's like, it's, even though it's got that Gwen Stefani kind of rap, hip-hop-y, a little bit of vibe to it. It's a lot of, it's so much fun. I want to talk a little bit about how you got into music, because you are truly a musician. Like, there are a lot of pop stars. There are, I think, people who are manufactured to be in the music industry today. But you are one of those people who I would truly call a musician. Was that something you knew at a young age you wanted to do? Did you grow up with music in your house?
Yeah, I think it's just a cultural thing. I'm a nice Jewish girl from Texas.
Oh, really? And, what part of Texas?
Dallas.
Oh, I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh my gosh, y'all! I have an attorney who's from Tulsa. He's been my attorney for over 25 years.
That's amazing.
And he said they used to come over to shop from Tulsa.
Yes, that's true.
Gotta come
true.
To Dallas to go shopping.
That's true. I remember that was always a big deal in high school. Like on the weekends, our friends, my rich friends, I should say, I would go along. I would go along sometimes, but they would all jump in the car with their moms and go on a weekend shopping trip to Dallas, because I guess we didn't have the same clothes or something in Tulsa.
Yeah, and they'd probably go to North Park, to Neiman.
Yep, that's it exactly. How funny.
You get a fried pie in Oklahoma before you left.
Oh my gosh, that's so
funny.
I love
funny. Fried pies.
So you were a nice Jewish girl from Dallas, Texas.
Yeah. And so music has always been it's just hugely valued in my family. My parents, my dad's a doctor, and my mom's a homemaker, but she studied dance in college, and they just are both – you know, everybody just is obsessed with music. They go to tons of musical theater, classical music. There was tons of albums and records in the house all the time, and the radio was on. When musicians would go on TV, it was a big deal. I have a big brother who's a classical pianist. We're 2 years apart, and he's a classical pianist, and he started very young. Piano lessons were in the cards for us all. You know, you had to take piano lessons. And by the time I was probably 6-7 years old, we were taking 2 piano lessons a week, one for technique and one for performance. And my older brother is a pianist. I have a younger sister who's writes music and sings music as well. She's a dance pop artist and electronic music. She's also an actress and a teacher. She works with kids with kids who have special needs in terms of their learning differences. But she's a musician, and I have a younger brother who's also, he does play music, but his profession is he is an engineer, and he owns a few studios with some partners in New York, and it's post-production audio studios, and they make all the big TV commercials that you see during the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow.
So everybody's really involved sort of in the arts. I mean, when we were growing up, the arts were an extracurricular, but it was what we spent all of our time doing. You know, we all went to piano lessons, dance. Well, the boys didn't go to dance, but my sister and I spent a lot of time in dance, theater, musical theater. My dad played the piano in the morning every weekend. There was just always music on. It was always a priority. Even when we started going to concerts, my mom, I remember she helped us get tickets to Elton John when I was
– What? That's 70s. Awesome.
And we went to go see Elton John around the time of his Best Of record, like in the mid 70s, like 78.
Uh-huh.
And we'd spent, music was always just a big priority. And because culturally, again, part of it for us is the education portion. So you aren't just a musician. You don't just pick up a guitar, but you also take lessons. That being said, I did learn a lot about guitar playing at summer camp. My friend Almadal, who was also a school friend of mine, she brought her guitar and she had started taking lessons, and she taught me how to play Stairway to Heaven and a couple other things. We would make up songs and do skits, and things were funny and serious, and music was all around, but there was a big portion culturally in my family that you also need to know what you're doing and learn what you're doing.
Sounds like it was like very creative, and your family was really focused on the arts, and
it was doing things, but it was also, yeah, and it's sort of like our household here. Like there's always art supplies out, and you know, you look all over the place, and there's different projects going on, clay and Play-Doh and potions and, you know, making up skits and setting up little forts and Barbie setups and,
that's,
you know,
fun.
All different kinds of things. But that being said, I don't think my parents really thought we would be musicians or actors for real when we grew up.
Like make a even career out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we did growing up. I was in plays.
What do you think they wanted you to be? They wanted you to be like a classically trained doctor.
Yeah, like a doctor.
Who could also
lawyer.
Play the piano.
Yeah, mostly doctor who goes just like them, you know, be a doctor and then be able to afford to go see really great musicians and support the symphony. And it was, you know, they'd come to see me in college and my friend Liz and I would have packed houses every time we play. And they'd say, well, what do you actually really want to do? I'm like, well, I think this is what I'm already doing. Like I'm kind of doing this already and we can already play in New York City and I think I should try this.
So they would be like, this is nice, honey. This is a fun time, but what is going to be your real job?
Yeah, exactly. And I think in a way that helped me, it made me want to prove that like, this is going to be my real job. That's not always great for kids because sometimes you do a real job and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, is this what I really want to do? Or am I just proving myself?
Sure.
Like, are you really want to be an actor or is that, you know, you get into actually, I know you're an actor as well. And like, I do some acting, not as much as you do, but sometimes you get roles and it's so exciting to get the role. And then you're there doing it. And you're like, okay, I'm sitting in a trailer. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing is worried about what my face looks like. I've got three lines. It's not really a character. Like when I was doing plays and I could really get into my character.
It's like you've been reading my thoughts.
Yeah. And then you're like, well, would I be better off maybe teaching kids and using my acting background because I can read really well and I enjoy, you know, people.
Yeah. There's definitely been, at least for me, a lot of that questioning lately. Like, am I, as far as acting, I've been pursuing a career in acting for over 10 years. And while I have had some success, there's been a lot more missed opportunities and, you know, quote unquote failures or whatever. So you start to question, am I doing the right thing? Am I headed down the right path? And I've been feeling very introspective.
That's just part of the job.
Yeah.
You're like, that's just the job. The job is mostly people telling, I mean, you hear it time and time again in these like career things you go to, speeches or whatever, or people give you advice. They're like, you're going to hear no a lot.
Yeah.
And now like, you know, 25 years later, I'm like, it's true. You hear no all the time.
A lot.
Like you just get used to it because it's mostly no. And I do a lot of voiceovers as well. And I definitely have some really great voiceovers I've gotten to do. But I was cleaning my desktop the other day on my computer and I was like, oh my gosh, I've auditioned for so many voiceovers. It's just unbelievable, you know? And it's just, luckily the process is fun for me. But yeah, I read a book that you might enjoy called Finding the Work You Love, How to Find the Work You Love by Lawrence Bolt, B-O-L-D-T.
Okay.
And it helps you, it's the shortest of all of his books. He's written a lot of career books that are like textbooks, basically. They're really thick. And a lot of them are about, I read it because years ago I was really doing well in retrospect. I was on the charts and the radio. I was spending hours and hours in hair and makeup chairs all over the world. And just like, oh my God, what am I doing? What, you know, it's, this is it, you know, what am I doing? And so I've always considered other careers. I think part of it, cause my parents, you know, planted that doubt and I let it stay there. Like, are you really using your brain? Are you really, you know, is this the best career for you? Are there other things that would be more fulfilling and more secure? Mm-hmm. And that's in the back of my head a lot. And, I found this book and it's supposed to help you figure out what you do want to do. And it's, I think, especially written for people in these corporate jobs who get kind of sucked into their job and then they don't have a lot of control in their life. And he helps walk you through all these different questions and answers about what's important to you and what are the real values and elements that make your life and maybe your work feel worthwhile and that make you feel connected to it. And I thought I was going to maybe find another job by answering all these questions, but I actually was able to look at the work I'm already doing in a more respectful way and realize that a lot of the values that I would satisfy by switching jobs, I was actually able to focus on those more in the job I'm already doing, which made my job a lot more satisfying, even with all the ups and downs, you know, even without, you know, being the top of the top all the time. But that being said, it's something you have to constantly, or not totally constantly, or you'll go crazy, but regularly go back and look at, like, am I doing, is this what I thought it was? Is this what I want to do?
Do you guys ever find yourself asking questions like that? Is this what I want to do? Well, we're going to get back to the interview with Lisa in just a minute, and you can hear what she has to say about that. But first, I want to talk to you about Nudu. Nudu, that's N-U-D-U, is a luxury skincare line. And I'll tell you, it is all about the health of your skin as well as making it beautiful. That's because Nudu is made from the purest, most potent natural botanicals and antioxidants. Here's the kicker. They're not only effective, but they're safe. There's no toxic chemicals in any of the Nudu products. And I can tell you, I have used these myself and noticed a wonderful difference. I've tried the cleanser, the toner, the moisturizer. I've noticed an immediate difference in the quality, the clarity, and the feel of my skin. And I'll tell you what, it gives me peace of mind knowing that every Nudu product is chemical free. What? I know. Go right now to Nudu.com. That's Nudu.com to find out how you can create radiant, healthy skin. I would like to get your thoughts on sort of the state of the music industry as it is right now. I had, I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Doty. He used to be the lead singer of Soul Coughing, and now he does a lot of solo stuff. I'm a huge fan of his, and he was on our podcast. I say our podcast, it's my podcast. He was on my podcast a few months back, and just really enjoyed talking to him about the music industry. And I would love to hear, because he's been doing it since the 90s as well. And I would just love to see, like, hear what your thoughts are, as like, how much has it changed? Does it seem like it's more of the same? And why do you stay in it, I guess, is what I would like to know.
Well, that's an interesting question, because, you know, we were talking about careers and everything, and it's funny that now I actually really love playing music. I love playing concerts. It's really fun, grown-up concerts and kids' concerts. It's really fun to connect with all those people. I enjoy the travel. It's not complicated for me. You know, it's complicated putting together the logistics of family and the puzzle, but I feel like we've gotten a pretty good balance here where I don't leave very long at a time. You know, I leave my house 5 days, 7 days at the most, and that's rarely. Like, it's usually a long weekend or 5 days or something like that. I really enjoy playing. I've got tons of songs to play, tons of songs I'm writing. There's so many ways to get music out there and connect with people, which is amazing. It's like a dream come true. Since I was a kid, I also had a radio show when I was in high school at the all boys school, and people would listen to me locally, and I'd give away records. And I love the music side of business, as well as the people, kind of like meeting people backstage and meeting a new man, you know, meeting managers and DJs and people who are in the industry and marketing people and publishers and stuff. So I love so many things about the music industry. The only problem is it's really hard to make a living in the music industry now.
Right.
So I think that's the biggest downside. If the record sales, there's like a few different ways you can make money as a musician, and two of the big ones have disappeared, including record sales. Mm-hmm. And for most people. And so it's just really hard to make a living. If it was easier to make a living doing this, then I'd be like, woohoo, this is great. But it is tough, and I do a lot of different things, so I'm able to, you know, put it all together. But to make a living is really challenging, you know?
And is it hard because they're not, like, you don't have the, you know, you sign a record deal anymore where they give you X amount up front and then you go on tour and you make your money on tour? Yeah. Like, what is it that's hard?
Well, no, people still make money on tour because that's like working at a job. Like, there's a guarantee. So you know that they're going to pay you at least a certain amount if you show up and play. It's just hard to, you can't sell records anymore. I sell CDs at shows, but not the same amount as when you used to buy records at a record store. People listen for free, you know, or yeah. through streaming sites where the royalties are very low. And radio royalties are lower. Plus, like Mike, you know, we're further away from the hit songs, mm-hmm. Which isn't even the goal anymore. It's more, you know, the goal is what the goal was originally.
Is that a goal to achieve that hit song status again?
Well, that's always amazing. I mean, you never know what's going to be popular, what's going to resonate with people. You might not be, you know, you might not be in the same category as whatever the cool new thing is, but you just never know if you're going to write a song for a soundtrack or have a song that connects with people for some reason. You know, you just don't know, or have a song in a commercial. So it's never completely out of reach, but it's not really, you know, it's like playing the lottery.
Yeah.
But luckily, instead of playing the lottery as a musician, the lottery is just writing a lot of songs, you know, and recording them and getting them out there. So you don't lose from doing that. You just might not win the lottery. But so the process is amazing. But like I said, you just can't necessarily, you don't necessarily make money from it.
Yeah.
You have to be way more strategic, which in a way is amazing. There's a lot of different strategies and things people are trying to do. On the other hand, every once in a while, I think, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be cool to be like what we perceive Fleetwood Mac or something, where you spend a year making a record and then you go on tour for a year and then you mm-hmm. take off some time and you write a record and then you, I was like, oh, that'd be so nice. I remember like a psychiatrist or some, or a psychologist once said, you need more punctuation in your sentences, in your life. I was like, yeah, you need, like there should be a period. And then like there's a break. And then, you know, there's different phases, but most of us that I know, we all are writing all the time, recording all the time.
It seems like that luxury doesn't exist anymore for being able to take a year to write an album, a year to record it, a year to tour. You know what I mean? Like, you have to crank out hits and songs so fast and furious.
You just kind of have to be on the ball all the time and create structure for yourself. But like I said, even that's not so horrible. But the problem is nothing is reliable in terms of income, which I guess it never has been. But at least the people I know who've had songs that were hit songs in the way in the past, like people who have had hit songs from the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they just had a nice steady stream of passive income while they continued being a musician and honing in on their craft and all that. Whereas now we're in a generation where that passive income is not reliable, really,
which
is too bad. But, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting
business right now. I mean, it's just, it seems so focused on the hits, but then I'm always like, well, I know my husband and I mostly just listen to the same favorites that we've always loved, you know, for years and years. And, you know, that's just, maybe it's just our generation. I don't know.
Well, I do too. And then that there's an issue too. Like, I feel like the market is more inundated with musicians. Everybody can record themselves.
Sure.
Everybody can put their music out there. But then that's also a good thing too, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's more of a matter of, you know, everybody being able to monetize their career, because there's so much freedom now, and it's amazing to have so much freedom creatively to make things. And the record company thing was always kind of a myth. Yes, they would give you an advance, but you had to have some good advice from people to know that you should never spend all that advance making your record, because it doesn't cost that much. B, you should treat it really conservatively and act like that's your income for the next 2 years for you and everybody else who's living off of that band, living off of that advance. If it's an entire band, you know, if you have a $500,000 advance and five band members and there's $100,000 per person for 2 years, plus you have to make a record for, back in those days, it would be like $150,000, $250,000. There's not a lot of money there, really.
No.
You don't have health insurance and you don't, you know, and you would get a certain amount of support from the record company, but that would come out of your pocket at the rate of which they were paying you royalties. So if they had a $1.50, which is probably an average royalty rate, you know, you would borrow $100,000 from them, but you'd have to sell, what is $100,000 where you're paying them back at $1.50 a record.
So you'd have to sell at least double. Yeah.
Yeah. To pay them back for what they gave you before you even see any money coming.
Wow.
So, you know, it's sort of a bad loan, basically. But then it comes along with some positive things, like certain record companies were good at support, marketing support. But then again, all that money would, you'd owe them that money too.
Here's what I like to know then is, you know, you're talking about finding ways to survive with your finances and make money, and then you also tour, and I know you have a lot of engagements. How do you balance that with your family life and being a mom? Because that's definitely one side of the entertainment industry that is always fascinating to me, because as actors, a lot of the work is in LA, or you go on location, and sometimes you can bring your family with you, or, you know, and whatnot. How do you balance the two, if you do at all, or if you're still working on balancing?
I keep a really detailed calendar that I'm doing and my family is doing. You know, she knows my son's karate lessons as well as I do. No offense, but probably better than what my husband knows about when my son's karate lessons are. But my husband's also really, really involved, and I finally, knock on wood, have a pretty good resource. I have a pretty good list of babysitters. I have a primary babysitter that we found who's amazing, who's flexible because she's also in music and acting, and a handful of other babysitters that we really like and trust. So, you know, just trying to keep on the ball, making sure that I know in advance when all important school events are, or personal events or religious school things are. This weekend, something's coming up. We didn't realize that the time that I was booked to play two sets at this great event, the SoCal Moms Family Play Day, which is an amazing event, which I love my kids to go to because it's so much fun. It's actually the same time as my daughter's big open house at her school.
Oh, no. So what do you do in that situation? So
that's complicated. That's unfortunate. Every once in a while, I do have to bite the bullet. It's not a graduation, and it's not a performance. So what I'm going to do is, my kids are not going to go to the event, and my husband's going to go take the kids to the school function, and I will race over after my second set. Instead of signing autographs after my second set, I'll sign autographs the entire time between my first set and my second set. And I'll just race over, and I'll catch the tail end of the thing. And next year we'll try to be even more careful about that. But it's all about like just, you know, enlisting help, getting my in-laws. My in-laws are awesome, and so are my parents, are great with the kids. Try to fly somebody in if I'm going to be away for longer than normal, which is unusual. I'll be in New York for the Carlisle run for 2 weeks. And I said yes, because I knew I could bring my family. I'll take my son out of preschool for a week, and my daughter will have finished school. So I'll take her, and they'll come to New York and hang out with my in-laws and come see me. And so I won't be away from them, but it's all just a balancing act. It's just, and I literally have a list of my priorities. It's like health, family, and then, you know, making money, you know, which hopefully is made up of things that I enjoy doing.
I love that. No, it's true. I love that, because you have to try to find a balance between, especially in this, in the entertainment industry, where everything is so freelance. We all sort of work for ourselves. Whether you're a musician, you're an actor, you're a writer, everybody's, you never know from one minute to the next when you're going to get your next gig. And if you have to go out of town or be on set for a few days or whatever, so I'm always curious to hear what everybody does to kind of make it work.
And some people have different, you know, I grew up, it sounds like you might have been the same way, just like really old school, Leave It to Beaver. Mom is, you know, the parents are there. Nobody travels a ton. You know, we did travel, but not like I travel in and out. You know, I recently was in Dallas with my kids. I brought them home. And the next day, I was, for that night when we got back, I had a movie premiere, but we all knew about it, and I'd been with my kids for 2 weeks straight, most of the day, all day. But I came back with my kids to Los Angeles. The next day I was on a plane going back through Dallas to go play a concert for a day in Florida. To me, that wasn't a big deal. But I grew up, you know, sort of in a really straightforward way. So I talked to like Sheryl Crow one day. I asked her, well, how do you do it with your two young kids? And she's like, well, I just take them with me. And I'm like, well, I think her taking her kids with her is probably different than me. I'm not on a big tour bus. You know, I don't have a friend. It sounds like she had maybe had a friend who can help come out with her, watch her kids. You know, it's just, we all do it in different ways. And I'm not somebody who's going to, you know, the way I would do it. I would like to do a summer trip where I play for 3 weeks and I'm out for a week, and then my kids come out and meet me for a week. And we do kind of like a family United States trip where you're looking at the St. Louis Arch, and then I go play a concert that night. And then they wake up and eat breakfast with whichever grown up, either my husband or grandparent, or cool babysitter. They eat breakfast with them. And then I wake up because I had to sleep late. And then we all go to a park or whatever, sightseeing, and drive to the next city. But that's a pipe dream. But I don't know. People do it different ways. And I try to talk to moms, and a lot of people, you know, I was listening to Sheryl Sandberg on a TED talk. I haven't read her book yet, but she was saying that women, there's not as many women executives advancing the same as men. And it's like, when you have kids, I don't know what happens, but you really, at least for me, I think a lot of women just, they choose to be more with their kids. You know, mm-hmm. It's just a priority. It just is.
It's true. And there's something about it.
You can't be everywhere. Yeah. And the people who I hear are very successful and have kids, they're either able to have so much help, which is awesome, but can be really expensive. Or maybe they have grandparents or family that can be really there all the time. But it just means you don't spend as much time with your family. And that's not what I'm used to. And also I'm not used to my kids. Like it's very strange for me to take my kids out of school to go to New York City. Like that's not acceptable, but I'm going to do it anyway a couple times. But that's unusual for me. For some people, it just, they don't blink an eye. It's just not a thing. You know, it's like, I'm doing this thing and the kids are coming with me.
Yeah. They incorporate their kids into their work and into their, you know, into their lives that way. There's been a few times where there's been many times actually I've taken my daughter with me to like an audition.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 4. She just turned 4 a couple weeks ago. And I've had to take her with me to audition since she was about 8 weeks old, maybe three months old. But she doesn't go to everyone. But it's just sort of, I'm like, well, this is my job. I don't have any family in LA. And I can't afford to pay $100 or $40, $50, whatever, every time I need a sitter for an hour.
You know. I just thought of a job for young actors. They could go to big calls, especially for women, and hire themselves out as a babysitter to watch people's kids while they go in.
Yeah. Well, I've actually bribed a lot of my friends to come with me, and I'll be like, hey, I'll buy you lunch if you just hang out with her in the car, or I'll, you know, just come and walk around the block with her. I've had a lot of friends who've done that. I have a little Facebook group that I started for parents who are like, hey, I'm going to this audition, you know, in Santa Monica. Is anybody going to be there at this time? Would you mind watching my daughter? You know, kind of something like that. Yeah, we could all connect. Yeah. Yeah. It's like help each other out, because it's really the only industry in the world and business in the world that I know of where we don't work 9-to-5s. We don't have a cubicle mate or anybody to swap daycare stories with, or, you know what I mean? Like it's such a freelance bohemian kind of industry, and we have to help each other.
Yeah, I bring my daughter to. I've brought my daughter to voiceover auditions. She's very civilized. She's even from a young age, you know, she would be able to sit quietly.
Channing's really good. That's my daughter. She's really good. She'll go in right now and she sits right down on the couch and she waits till I'm done. And then one time we were leaving and she goes, "Good job, mommy." And I was like, oh, thank you.
That's really cute.
It was so
sweet. I did bring my son when he was a little younger. I remember he sat on a stool. Actually, it might have been my daughter. Now I don't remember. But a lot of my voiceover auditions are just in a studio. They're not with a casting director. But he sat on a stool completely quietly while I read the copy. And it was fine.
Aww.
Cell phones, which is, you know.
Right, exactly.
There's a cell phone.
Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you have a lot of things going on right now, and I feel like I could probably chat with you forever about being a mom in this town and music industry, because like I said, music is a big part of our family as well. So this has really been such a treat for me to talk with you, and I hope I get to see you on Sunday too.
It'll be really fun. Yeah. I'm playing at 10:15 and I'm playing at noon, and I'll be signing CDs and stuff in between the two. And I think it's a really, really fun event.
Well, I'm going to put information up on my website about the event, but also about your, you know, is it a residency at the Carlisle? Is that what I read? Or is it?
It's a residency. I mean, I think of it as a run, but people keep calling it as a residency as well. And then I call it a residency. And also you can mention all my new kids records that are on Amazon. There's two newer ones that are on Amazon that you can listen to for free on Amazon Prime.
And then is Feel What You Feel?
Yeah, that's one of them. And the other one is Nursery Rhyme Parade.
Yes.
And the Nursery Rhyme one also has videos you can watch, a bunch of videos, like over 30 short videos. of all the great nursery rhymes.
So cute. Yes, I'm going to put all of that information up on motherhoodinhollywood.com, as well as some links and where people can find more information about you. And also, can they can buy your albums on iTunes?
They can buy some on iTunes, and the most recent ones only on Amazon Prime exclusively.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, you guys have a wonderful week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.